Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 6, 2005. Today's session is entitled Children and the Christian Faith, presented by Bonnie Miller McLemore. Disc number MIB-2005-02.
My daughter Karen Barnes here. She just went back to the room to get her Bible. She thought we should probably need a Bible, I guess. Anyway, she's from Colorado. I'm from Arizona. And hurry, Karen.
There she is. Thank goodness.
And I'm just comforting her because I'm the grandmother of this wonderful child that we're raising. We're just introducing ourselves. I'm Dorothy McCann, Tucson, Arizona.
Karen Barnes, Pinos, Colorado.
And why are you here?
And you can say a bit about your interest in this topic, this session.
To raise my child in a godly way.
More? No, that's fine.
Also, a Seattle area where sister churches, we're talking about how our churches are sort of next door to each other, combining some programming. And child care, spiritual practice, we have three young children, so we're just wanting to incorporate the spiritual development in our children as much as we can.
And I'm Teresa Wagner, also from the Seattle area, just trying to keep sane while keep centered. And I don't even know which session we're doing.
I'm Shelley Barnett from St. Paul, Minnesota, and I'm a 13-year-old daughter who's very spirited, and I think that that's what says it all.
I'm Liz Knudsen, and I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I attended the first session, and what got me back was just a reminder to listen to kids. I give tours to kids at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, and I've learned more from them than any of the classes I've taken, but I've noticed the chaperones from the schools are always talking in the back. And I just loved it when you said you could learn so much from listening to kids. And it's such a shame that they're not hearing what they're saying. So, just a reminder to keep the ears open.
Yeah.
I have two children also, 13 and 9.
I'm Mary Dornell. I have two grown children, 21 and 25. I was a parent educator in the community college system in Seattle area for 18 years, and I worked at our Redeemer's Lutheran in Ballard, where I do teach parenting as part of my job. And so it's kind of a different focus between secular and spiritual.
I'm Roseanne Martinez, and I have a son that is about to be 10. He's in the upper nines, he says. And
soon to be in the lower 10.
Sessions because I am transitioning. We lived at Holden for 2 years and we're doing life differently now. We live on half the income we had before we came to Holden, and I'm at home full time, so I like to be referred to as domestic goddess. But I'm kind of trying to create sacred at home with both my spouse and my child. So, new ideas and thoughts about how I can happen.
My name is Greta Rodrigo, and I'm from Spokane. I am a high school teacher, grade 9 through 12. So and I'm very lucky that I teach in a spiritual school. It's a Jesuit school. So I like to be able to find places to put that in and to find new resources. I think for me, this session, the idea of parenting and soulmates, and that my husband, that's kind of what drew me also to this one, is the idea of the parents and the soulmates, and what we do creates the environment. And we have
guess I could add just a little to that. I'm Steve Reno. And I think all that being said, that also parenting just overlaps into everything else I do in life, I think, as far as my work and teaching and everywhere you go. So very, the topic has no problems with relevance. I was flipping through the Bonnie's books in the bookstore and the chapter I was, I go by chapter organization and topics and things like that. It's pretty interesting, so got me here. Thank you.
I'm Lori Rao. I have twins who are 16, soon to be 17. We're in the upper 16s. and I guess I'm always interested in parenting things, and it's kind of strange because I feel like I'm moving to that end of parenting where things have changed a lot in terms of family dynamics. Still really important, and yet not as a parent. So I think it's taking a little more thought to figure out how to maintain practices and how to keep connected when your kids really don't want to be connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this is really helpful, especially because of the range of ages, interests, ways in which our lives intersect with children, from teaching to parenting to grandparenting. In some ways, when I looked at the title, the session we're doing, session two, Parenting and Spiritual Practice, Soulmates and Everyday Epiphany, I realize parenting sometimes comes across as a limited term because we think of it instantly as biological parents, and maybe it should be care of children as a spiritual practice to be as inclusive as possible. The Christian church has mandated all of us to care for all children, not just our own. And so sometimes we misinterpret parenting as just the biological parent, rather than a corporate responsibility that we're all involved with. Let me just say a little bit about the framework of this session. What are the resources in the Christian tradition for understanding parenting as a spiritual practice is sort of my main question for today. And Soulmates, I'd love to hear what you did with Soulmates. Soulmate, I was actually thinking in part of Soulmates in the longer Christian tradition. I like your reading of it, though. It's just nice to get a different way of hearing that. Soulmates in the longer Christian tradition that might support redeeming the mundane, the daily, the drudgery, the hard work of parenting as a spiritual practice. And my sense that there are some incredible soulmates in the Christian tradition to support us that we've forgotten. And so that's something. Really what I'm going to be doing today is trying to revive some of our distant memories, particularly those of us, or all of us in the Protestant tradition. And not all
offense.
Offense. Well, I mean, I only ask that because as I've done this work, I realize that in some ways there are some real gifts buried in the Protestant, Reform, and Lutheran tradition that I'm really interested in reclaiming. And so that's kind of what we're going to be doing today. To say a bit about myself, a little bit more about how this fits in, just as you've introduced yourselves, I also have three children. They're 14, 16, and 19. And I really do relate to what Lori just said, the change in age and the complexities of relating to kids that are older. They're less proximate, they're less physical, you don't know when you're going to have an epiphany. And they seem rarer than you have when they're younger, and they're freer, and you're in more intimate, constant body contact, even physically. And so that's where I am. I've been thinking about these issues. I started teaching when at a small United Church of Christ seminary in Chicago when my oldest was 9 months, and he's now 19. So that's kind of how I can measure my work. And when I was doing graduate study, there was hardly any attention paid to issues related to family work, and particularly in women's lives. But these issues aren't limited to women now. And in fact, none of my required books on the exams were written by women or people of color. They were all white European men. When I began teaching them with this 9-month-old, I just had this hunger to read literature about women's lives and family lives and the different ways we might think and understand ourselves. And so I've been more or less circling around some of these issues for this whole time And since I brought flyers that I don't want to take home, the books you're talking about are in the bookstore, and they're in the background. I'm not, and I've got flyers if you want a flyer to see. I've written two that are really pertain to these issues. The first one was really in the acute stages of early parenting, and also a mother was the title, Work and Family's Theological Dilemma. And it really does struggle with some of the questions of how do we work out complex new roles and new lives, and why is it a spiritual issue? Why is it a theological issue, not just a public policy issue of child care? What are some of the religious questions that it provokes? And then the second flyer is a more recent book that's really more on children and rethinking children's lives, and how we understand children from Christian perspectives in a world that is wanting to define children for us as consumers, as burdens, as products, and we've lost maybe a sense of how to think of children with, as you were saying when we did introductions, as knowing and as richly spiritually formative, as full human beings, people that we should attend to. So that's sort of a little bit of background for this session. I want to dive in by, again, kind of situating this, for those of you who are at the first session, just sort of a brief review of what is the received tradition? If our question today is, what are the resources for understanding parenting as spiritual practice? What's the problem? Why don't we see parenting as a spiritual practice? I want to argue that the received tradition has defined spirituality in a very limited and narrow way that makes it very difficult to see parenting as something faithful. And in between that session and this one, I came across an article by a woman, Janet Solskus. She's an English, Briton theologian, but it just captured in a nutshell sort of what I talked about in my first session that I thought would be helpful as a starting place. So I'm just going to read from her piece a bit to get us going. For each of us, no doubt, a vision is conjured by the phrase, the spiritual life. And for most, I'd wager that in our personal lives at least, this is an eschatological vision. What does she mean by this? Well, this is something we piously hope for in the future. But it seems pretty far from our daily lives, where spiritually, we just bump along, in quotes. I believe we can also speak of the received view of spiritual life, which in its Catholic Christian form might involve long periods of quiet, focused reflections, dark churches, and dignified liturgies. In its higher reaches, it involves time spent in contemplative prayer, guided by solitary retreats, and sometimes the painful wrestlings with God so beautifully portrayed by the metaphysical poets. Above all, it involves solitude and collectiveness, centeredness. I think you said we're going around, how hard that is. It does not involve looking after small children. that's the received tradition. She goes on, and she's an academic, so when she refers to colleagues here, she's talking about academic colleagues. But I have been in the past envious and in awe of colleagues, usually bachelors, who spend their holidays living with monks in the Egyptian desert or making long retreats. They return refreshed and renewed and say such things as, "It was wonderful. I was able to reread the whole of The City of God," which is Augustine's major work, in Latin. Something I've not done for 3 or 4 years now. Then she says, "I then recall my own holiday," which is going to sound familiar as we look around Holden, "as entirely taking up with explaining why you can't swim in the river with an infected ear, why two ice creams before lunch is a bad idea, with trips to the disgusting public conveniences," which she means bathrooms in Europe, "with children who are, quote, desperate, with washing grubby clothes, pouring cooling drinks, and cooking large meals in inconvenient kitchens." Thank goodness we don't have to do that here. But "for children made cranky by too much sun and water." Does all that sound familiar? "From such holidays, one returns exhausted and wondering why people go on holiday." But middle-class family holidays are only memorable instances of a wider whole. Parents of small children find themselves looking enviously over the wall at their more spiritual brethren. Are these not the true spiritual athletes whose disciplined prayer life brings them closer daily to God? Question mark. My answer to that, my whole work this week, is to say no. No. You all are the true spiritual athletes. And why is that? And I want to say a bit more, how can we reclaim that? I want to keep reading because the next couple paragraphs are really nice. Because I think you're going to hear yourself in some of these ideas, her experiences here. The received view of the spiritual life seems to confirm that these other people are the spiritual athletes. As does a great deal of guidance from our pastors and priests. One story will have to suffice. I didn't read this in my week. I did a 7:30 session, didn't read this, and then this exact story got told by someone in the group. An echo of it, analogous. A devout Anglican woman of my acquaintance had her first baby. Like most new mothers, she was exhausted, but she was also distraught to find her devotional life in ruins. She took advice from three priests. The first told her, you're going to love them. I mean, you can just predict, can't you?
Yeah.
What do you think they're going to say? Well,
try harder.
Try harder.
Get some sleep.
Get some sleep. And actually, what's interesting is, as I've been sort of...
Make it,
simplify your life. I mean, all these things.
Because, see, it's your fault. It's your fault that you're not spiritual.
Yeah, it's your fault rather than something wrong with the definition of spirituality. Or rather than what you are doing is spiritual in itself. In the practice, in the routine, in the drudgery. In fact, the woman she came up afterwards and told me that she heard, I didn't read this, but she told me she heard some of the advice that this woman received. And literally, when she finds that one woman said, well, she said she couldn't pray. She didn't have devotional time. And when finally someone in her church said, don't worry about it. And then when I said to her what you were doing, when you were nursing, and she almost started crying because no one had said that to her. But what I want to say is, I'll quote a little bit from Luther, is Luther would say what you were doing when you were nursing was a spiritual embodiment of faith and love and attention and care. But here's the advice she got. Like most new mothers, she was exhausted, but she took advice from three priests. The first told her that if the baby woke at 6, she should rise at 5. For a quiet hour of prayer. The second asked if her husband... The next one's good, too. The second asked... If her husband, I think right now, many of us reverse and share in roles. And, I had a colleague who also, the second advice was her husband, couldn't her husband come home early from work 3 times a week so she could get to Mass? Now, I had a colleague who also said the same thing to me. Well, can't you get your writing done by just leaving for 3 months? I went home and told my husband, he just started laughing. Yeah, right. You're going to leave for 3 months. Get your work done. Is that, anyways, that's some other kind of advice. It doesn't work, okay? This advice proved the next line is great. This advice proved threatening to life and marriage. The third told her, relax and just look after your baby. The rest of the church is praying for you. Okay, now that's the number two. She says this advice, the third, was the best. It does show, too, though, why one does not really... let me get this below the sentence. The advice of the third was the best and shows, too, why one does not really resent the retreat person who's retreating on, she says, Mount Ethos, or the religious contemplatives. We hope, in other words, that these people are praying for us. But still... This priest's advice is not entirely consoling. It doesn't honor that you yourself might be of value in your activity. Is the busy new mother a sort of Christian on idle, like on hold? Will others carry on the seeking God's faith while you spend 6 or 8 or 12 years, or I don't know, I'm feeling like 19, and I'm just distracted by the cares of the home. Is this the Martha phase of life, when you run the creche and make the tea while the real work of attending to God is elsewhere? Not surprisingly, many new parents feel slightly bitter about this way in which we understand spirituality. Boy, it really rings true. I mean, another story I have that fits with this is I was at a consultation on Christian practices and Christian theology, and most of the people there were, called a practical theologian. I teach pastoral care. Most of the folks there were systematic theologians, but they think more abstractly. Anyway, there was a woman there, an Anglican, very interested in contemplative spirituality, and she herself made that exact same statement. Well, when I had my children, I had to give up my discipline prayer. And I heard her say that, and I thought, wow, that's wrong. Don't we need to rethink prayer? Well, we have some help in the tradition, and what's been interesting for me as a non-Lutheran is to discover Luther, and what a friend I have in Luther. He knew a lot about family living and prayer. We might even call him sort of the father of this effort to redeem the holy and get it out of the cloister and into daily life. And as a footnote here, I will say I also want to, and in my other work, if you look further, really redeem and honor the women of theology in the last 10 to 20 to 30, 40 years, including myself, who, even very different than Luther, have contested sort of traditional models of the family that have excluded women's experiences, richly spiritual, including nursing, but a variety of other ways of thinking about women's lives. So I go to Luther with some caution, because I also know he also perpetuated sort of a patriarchal, constricting view of the family that limited women's and children's lives. But nonetheless, he did some intriguing things. He put his own 16th century principles of religious reformation into action. Now, he didn't quite do this so quickly. He kind of drug his foot into marriage. I don't know if any of you have read some of his his biography's material, but you know, some of the other monks were saying, yeah, into marriage, this is what this means. But you know, he wasn't going to do that, but there was sort of this unattached woman who couldn't quite get herself attached. And he kind of finally said, okay, you know, I'll a former nun. So he renounced his celibacy, he married a former nun, and he raised 6 children and 4 orphans of children that were somewhat distantly and indirectly related, for whom he felt responsible. When I first read Luther's remarks, I was literally disarmed. Here was this male theologian several centuries ago who found God in stinky diapers. And he even uses words as only Luther can, as if they were adorned with jewels. And he declares domestic work, quote, holy, godly, precious. I mean, that's really remarkable. When you think a bit of where he's coming from, and I talked a bit about this on Monday, several centuries of honoring celibacy as the higher road, the better road, the honor, where the holy and precious really is. Here are his words. And in the background, you can hear him arguing with this long tradition of monastic celibacy. And arguments were made against marriage, quite radically denigrating of some of the drudgery of the household. When our natural reason takes a look at married life, he says, she turns up her nose and says, alas, must I wash the rock the baby? And this is a real run-on sentence, so get ready. Must I rock the baby, wash its diapers, make its bed, smell its stench? Only Luther can throw in these words like that. Stay up nights with it, take care of it when it cries, heal its rashes and sores. And on top of that, take care of my wife, provide for her, labor at my trade, take care of this, take care of that, do this and do that, endure this and endure that, and whatever else of bitterness and drudgery married life involves. one thing after the next. And just when you think, very different from monastic life when there are hours of prayer, just when you think, I got it, in control, it just goes haywire. You know, it doesn't take very much. It
sounds like a postmodern man, someone who's involved with his children.
Right, it does. Yeah, that really does.
That home office thing.
Yeah. And this next sentence, really, it harkens back to this sort of Platonic Greek view of spirituality. What should I make myself such a prisoner? That word prisoner was really a word that the Greeks used about the material bodily life, that we were imprisoned in our bodies. We need to free ourselves of this. And again, we don't realize, this is centuries ago, but it still is a way of thinking about spirituality that hangs over us. What does Christian faith say to this, Luther asks? It opens its eyes, looks upon these insignificant, distasteful, and despised duties in the spirit, and is aware that they are adorned with divine approval, as with the costliest gold. And jewels, this jewel coming here. I confess to thee, I am not worthy. He gets extreme. I am not worthy to rock the little babe or wash its diapers or to be entrusted with the care of the child and its mother. In other words, he's saying this is so sacred ground. You know, this Moses, take off your shoes. This is where it is. Oh, how gladly will I do so, though the duty should be even more insignificant and despised. Neither frost, nor heat, nor drudgery, nor labor will distress or dissuade me, for I am certain that it is thus pleasing in God's sight. It's pretty.
He's 13-year-old.
13-year-old Colin. But he's
just all the way up there.
Helping one to realize more deeply, you know, what it means to be a child of God.
Right.
And that's where I struggle.
Yeah.
And I don't have any doubt that it's a good thing to do, but what about that?
Go ahead, Steve.
If you think of Luther and that whole works and what you do is good, I think Luther would put it less in terms of good as much as vocation and calling. What, this is your calling to be a mother or to be a father and the priesthood of all believers, and that everything you do, whether it's a hobby or a career, everything is your vocation, and you can bring your spiritual life into all that
or
permission.
Or that it's not so much that you bring your spiritual life into it, but that living is the spiritual. And that, you know, my husband grew up as a farmer, and so, you know, in a diversified farm where they had hogs and dairy, and so they're always pitching manure. And he, when I was first nursing, I had our first baby, and I was just, you know, the daily things that just I had to attend to, just to make sure I had dry diapers and that I had plenty of milk and all of that. And I said, these chores, I'm just so exhausted. It's just, you need to start thinking of the chores, the ritual of the chores as prayer life, as spiritual, because, and farmers do, especially small farmers, that, you know, you just have to, the pitching of the manure and the spreading it on the ground and the cow can't lie in the manger or the bed with if it's not clean, and, you know, all of those things. And so for me, it really reframed being with the babies.
It's a really good question. And in fact, I think it's what I was saying on Monday is it's not just that while you're doing the drudgerous thing, you think of God. I talked about some techniques that breath prayers or centering prayer, or Brother Lawrence talked about the presence of God in the work. It's not just that you think, okay, I'm going to think about God. It's that you actually say that the routine itself is spiritual. Now, what makes it spiritual? I would argue that when it is formative of our lives in a spiritual way, formative is the word I want to underscore here. And I'm going to digress a bit and come back. I think that's such a good question. She has a footnote and then another. It's a long way to come back to your question. I think it's really is a good way to go. She has a small footnote that's just really nice for us to hear. And it reads this. It has been pointed out to me that I paid no attention in this paper to the Lutheran and Reformation traditions of domestic holiness. This is largely deliberate, since I'm addressing a version of the spiritual life associated with Catholic, small c, aspects of Christianity. Indeed, the faith spiritual life is one with which Catholics, large c, are more likely to use that phrase spiritual life than Protestants. Now, this is changing today, but I think her claim is generally right. However, it is also the case that women friends of mine in the Reformed tradition tell me that despite positive signs, things are not much better with this received tradition for them in their own churches. But then she has a note in the text itself where she said there are places where the daily and the trivial has been reclaimed, but for the most part, such things as attending to a squalling baby, quote, are seen as honorable duties, like doing the good, as you're saying, consonant with God's purposes, rather than themselves spiritually edifying. Mm-hmm. Now, I think, when I read that, I thought, did Luther do that? And I think Luther borders. He does see it as a duty, as one of the things, as a vocation. You're called to do this. But I also think if you dig deeper, you can find in Luther a sense that this is spiritually edifying. Edifying would be another word for spiritually formative. And one of the wonderful stories in a biography about Luther, Here I Stand by Roland Baton, it's probably the most readable biography. You want to read something fun on Luther and still get the history. He tells a story of a colleague and friend who said, you know, I'm going to bring a sherry bowl and hang it over my dining room table because it, you know, it reminds me of God. And Luther looked at him and said, well, why don't you just look at your children? Again, I think Luther had, not that he wanted to, you know, not that he was eager, but I think that he landed in a busy, messy, dirty, stinky household and with a pretty, you know, in-your-face wife. And I think that he discovered in some ways. Now, I also just made some of these discoveries, found other soulmates more recent. One is a woman, Elizabeth Dreyer. I'm pretty sure she's probably Catholic. There are, as I said Monday, more Catholics looking at family spirituality, but she has a book called Earth Crammed with Heaven. I don't think she's married. I don't think she has children, but I don't know. But she has a section in that book that I read in an earlier version when it appeared in a spiritual journal called Weavings. And the article itself was on redefining asceticism, and it had just a piece of it that I just, when I read, this is what she does. She calls parenting the aesthetic opportunity par excellence. Maybe back to your question of is it spiritual? How is it spiritual? Because it's a discipline. It forms us. It's changed you all. I mean, what I would love is to sit with each of you for half an hour and ask you, how do you think it's changed you? And maybe when I stop at next step, my watch so I could look at it. No, I don't know what I did. 11:25. We've got till 11:45, right? And I read about that. Yeah. So keep that question. I'd love to hear it. Maybe we could go around and just hear a brief sentence on how am I different? How has it been an aesthetic opportunity par excellence for me? What did it do to my spiritual Christian outlook and faith and practice of your faith? But anyway, so several years later, she dubs it this aesthetic opportunity par excellence. If regarded from the right angle, a parent's daily life has an oddly haunting, these are my words, resemblance to that of a monastic. Unbidden, unexpected, and maybe this is the hard part, we talked about this morning. A monastic knows when the prayer hours are coming. We don't. So you just get pulled and jerked around. And I think that's what makes it so hard. And it's ever present. You don't have a choice to enter the sanctuary and then leave it. You're just immersed in it. But unbidden, unexpected, opportunity arises for a similar kind of disciplined religiosity, if we want to call it that, faithfulness, that is at the heart of asceticism's practice. Here's her words, and she's really talking about early parent, but I think it stretches beyond that. A full night's sleep, time to oneself, freedom to come and go as one pleases. All this we give up to a certain extent. Huge chunks of life are laid down at the behest of infants, and then later parents must let go. And it's interesting, she jumps for a huge part, huge chunks of life are laid down at the behest of infants. I still think all of us to this day reorder our lives in so many. I mean, I'm probably here this week because of my middle son. And I was ordering when I could go based on when he needed to do what. Not that my needs didn't figure in, but that constant juggling and balance of where do my needs lie, where did the child and youth and kids' needs lie, and how do we adjudicate that without what women have tended to do, which is extreme self-denial and self-loss and self, you know, destruction even.
There's nothing like that day when, like all of us now in this day and age, you get 24 hours or less in the hospital, to that period of time when you leave for the hospital pregnant,
yeah,
in your own self, you're just responsible, really, even
for
if you're
for
yourself. You go to the hospital, and then what seems like an extremely long time, but by the time you get home with this baby in your arms, it was a flash, and you're going, oh my God,
yes,
you know, oh my God, this is my life now. Everything that I am about. And besides, this thing's going to be sucking on me for the next year. You know, it's just, I just remember, I think Rich took a picture of me. You know, I still look pregnant, you know, and we've got this thing. And then for those days and days and days that thing does nothing. It doesn't smile, it cries, it moves, and it sucks. You know, it's just,
and for me, yeah, there hasn't been anything more spiritual in my life than that time. I mean, I grew up Lutheran. I was in confirmation. I would go to church because my parents made me. But after I looked at my baby, my first baby, I knew.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. I knew. I mean, not changing the diapers and everything has been spiritual. I'll agree with that. It's been good. But I can't understand how. I mean, I respect people who don't have kids. But for me, it just elevated me up to a whole other point.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
It brought me right down. I mean, you know, I can get
started. I was exhausted. I'm not saying I was. I wasn't like dancing. But when I saw the eyes, I knew right away that this had lived with me somewhere else. I mean, and I can appreciate other people's children more because of my children, I think, too.
Oh, there's so much to pick up here. I think what you're saying, the church hasn't known what to do with. They haven't known how to deal with this. In other words, if you have this early Christian tradition that has denigrated the bodily, that has denigrated the physical, and has not really given a place for women's embodied experience, and yet many women and men now would say that this moment of birth giving is a certain kind of epiphany, that word I've used in the title for this session, and a tradition has not known where to put this. We have alternative traditions that some feminist theologians, you know, critique that was a taken away from women, the ownership of baptism and birth giving, of feeding the Eucharist. I remember being pregnant and then nursing. Both two of my children were Advent pregnancies and births in January, and feeling like somehow the communion table was oddly disenfranchised my sense of the way in which I was giving of my body, you know, that somehow the tradition has struggled with this for lots of reasons around patriarchy, sexism, as well as ambivalence about the body and sexuality. But the flip thing I don't want to lose is what you're saying, Roseanne, which is it isn't always like this. There are moments of sheer hard work, drudgery, and confusion, and you know, and I think if we say that the moments of doing the laundry, I have other stuff in here, Catherine Norris reclaiming laundry is as sometimes redemptive, but, and I have to say, we did our own diapers, cloth, I loved it, and there was something of the spiritual for me in that, for lots of reasons and ways I could describe in more detail, but it is, but when I was doing laundry to come to Holden, I was thinking, come on, get into the... And then I'm thinking, no, right now I'm mad I'm in here, I'm tired of folding, and I got way too many kids' clothes. What? Why aren't they out? You know, they're doing it out there doing Game Boy.
When you're past spiritual.
Right, they need a little spiritual laundry going. So, I mean,
And I was going to say, on Monday, the rabbi mentioned during his Bible study, at the very end, this idea of spirituality is becoming concerned with the other. And isn't most of what we do, especially when our kids are really little, all for the other? It really is. I mean, you give up your own needs for sleep and exercise and that prayer you're used to and friendships and all kinds of things are given up. So that the child...
Work as you knew it. I mean, if you were working full time.
Yeah. So it is spiritual when you look at it that way.
Yes, and it's so formative to have to get outside of yourself without losing yourself. Again, that's what I think the feminist women's movement has said, to do that without self-demise is a real spiritual challenge. I see so many hands. You're there and then back over here.
Our baby was hospitalized just before we left, and they let us out of the hospital about 20 hours early so that we could meet our train to get here. And every time we changed the diaper, that first week we were here, and there were cloth diapers, we were so grateful they were cloth, and it was so thank you, God. This doesn't mean we don't have to make that trip down the hill to the hospital. Thank you, God. And we're still in that mode right now that I can wring it out.
Kind of dirty
diapers. Yeah.
I know, it's really strange. I mean, I did have a similar kind of thing, changing diapers. It was bizarre. But sort of, wow. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, go ahead.
I think that there's a part of it where if you don't find parenting to be, I mean, if it's a real struggle for you, then that's another, you know, should. And, you know, if maybe your experience was you're giving up a lot that's been important to you spiritually and as a person, you know, to take this new role. And, you know, if the church doesn't know what to do with parenting, they sure don't know what to do with, you know, people who have, you know, very mixed feelings about parenting. And I was linked by it for 10 years.
Right.
Until about, you know, 6 months ago.
Right.
And I work full time. I continue to work full time. Took, you know, a few months off each time. And then Carl worked full time until we got our third. And then we decided that was crazy. So he works a little less than full time. But, you know, it is not easy, and I love it, and I, you know, am blessed with a fairly resilient body, so I can, you know, jump in and out of this, you know, and nurse until they're 3 or maybe 4, you know, and, you know, it is not necessarily an easy thing for everyone, and, you know, I have a friend from my church in Minneapolis who is very introverted, and she's had a terribly hard time being a parent. Her child is a raging extrovert, and she has a hard time relating to that. There's someone constantly demanding something of her, you know, and being true to herself and also being true to being a parent is a real struggle, you know, and that's, I think, challenge with folks who have postpartum depression. You know, you're supposed to be happy. And there is that beautiful joy for many people, but for other people, because of chemistry, they're not. And there's a shame, and the church, you know, shames those people. So.
Well, and I think your portrayal of the hospital, that actual movement from internal to external, is really helpful, because I think one of the things that parents at all stages, and it would be nice to even hear this grandparent perspective, well, I think you may not realize, even now, even with a 19-year-old, it's just how lifelong this, I don't want to be negative, but yes, burden and work is that I will always feel a sense of I have a responsibility, not just feel a responsibility, there is a responsibility that is different and never to be taken back. It's such a radical change.
And the point is, you know, so much of our life we transition through things. This is quick, and in that moment of childbirth, it's like that.
Yeah,
right. It's just like, cool. So, right. Yeah, you have 9 months to prepare, but when I have these
things
out,
yeah.
And unfortunately, so, I think sometimes this idea that you're always thinking of the other has been sort of idealized as unconditional love that women do, rather than honored as work. It is work. In fact, in the child book, the Let the Children Come, when I talk about child, I have a chapter on child is simple. Child as gift, and then I have a chapter on child as labor, mm-hmm. as labor, and that's partly really, you know, I don't want to just credit the women's movement and feminist theology, but really that's where you can say, and that's okay. Actually, that's part of the discipline. If you're going to say it's a spiritual discipline, is that it isn't always love that you are acting. I mean, it's love. What would be the way we would say it? It's loving labor. But maybe that would be the best phrase.
And reminding ourselves that we're not alone. I mean, we were children. You know, yes. We were taking care of our
parents.
You know, someone raised our parents. I mean, this isn't an isolated case here.
Right.
If we take it in, like, this is all happening to me, my gosh, it's, you know, it happens everywhere.
And then sometimes you take care of your parents when they get older.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, my struggle is that the church doesn't honor that. I am constantly feeling the pull, you know, come into church, we got to do these things at church, and forgetting that, you know, people have families and other obligations, and that somehow those aren't as important as what's going on inside the church building.
Like, that is so helpful to say. And, you know, in the first session, we don't have any pastors here, do we? In this
yes.
Session. We do?
Former?
I mean, you know, in the first session, I have to say, pastors need to hear what you just said.
Yep.
And to be able, whether it's in the actual ritual of the baptism, to celebrate the spiritual work that this person has taken on as, you know, or whatever, pastors need to lead the way here. And you've got hell in Martin Luther again. I just have to go to this. And yet it's really, this is really nice. Basically, even if you go back to early Christian history too, there's another interesting figure there, John Chrysostom. He is an Eastern Orthodox theologian, so we probably hardly ever mention him. But what's interesting about him is even though like Augustine, like some of the other early church fathers, he was very much of, you know, rah-rah monastic life, he changed his mind. And he started to really quit applauding monasticism. I don't think he ever put it down, but he began to praise family life as really what is important in terms of faith and faith formation. And as part of that, he actually, like Luther, saw parents as responsible every bit as much as those who were monks and priests for teaching and practicing hospitality, neighbor love, and charity. But he has this interesting sentence where he writes, if artists, and I'm not sure why he makes this analogy because I'm not an early church historian expert, but if artists who paint portraits of kings are held in high esteem, will not God bless 10,000 times more, those are his words, parents who raise children in good faith? Then this is a sentence I want to get to. Otherwise, what answer will we have for Christ's judgment seat?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's hearkening to Matthew 25, which is the passage you'll know right away when I tell you, for I was hungry and you gave me food, I was in prison and you visited me. I don't know how many of you as acute parents hear that and think, I've got to get out of the house, I got to get to the food pantry, I got to get to the, I'm not tutoring, you know. And that's good, but what Luther is going to say here, he proclaims this, quote, how many good works you have at hand in your home with your children who needs all such things as these, like a hungry, thirsty, naked, poor, and prison sick soul. He's christening, in other words, that this too, not this only, but this too, and that's really important. Because I think the temptation and the danger is that we don't want, this is not to excuse us from wider works of mercy, or moving beyond the household, or really what we talked about some Monday, overindulging our own kids, as if their best school and their best music lessons and all that is it. But it does sanction the domestic in a way that we just have forgotten. And I think that there's a psychology talk about the psychological emergency of early parenting. It's really true with early parenting. You can't get out of that.